Hi, Parshas Ekev, guys. If you don't know this pasuk, then you've got bigger problems than you can imagine. Leman yirbu yameichem, perek yud aleph pasuk chav aleph. Leman yirbu yameichem, yimei v'neichem al adama, so that your days and the days of your children will become lengthy upon the land. Asher nishpashem lo'seichem lo'sizlam, that God swore to your fathers to give to them. Kimei hashamayim al haaretz. The extra credit today will go to the person who understands what that line means. You will have length of days like the days of the heaven on the earth. What in the world does that mean? Like the days of the heaven on the earth. We say it every day. We say it twice a day. It's a chiyuv d'oraisa to say these words. And yet these words are very, very difficult to understand. That's one question that we definitely have to learn. But number two, what's the connection between mitzvos and long life? We know there's a famous gra that says that there are two mitzvos that promise long life. Shiluach hakan, you know, sending the mother bird away before taking the eggs or the little chicks from the nest. And number two, kibud av v'aim. There is another one, by the way, not cheating on weights and measures. That is a third one over there. But that's it. That promise is arichos yomim. That's the promise of arichos yomim. And then everything else is supposed to be something different. So here we're saying, if you keep these mitzvos, leman yirbu yameichem yimei v'neichem, we're promised long life. Why specifically long life? So I'm going to tell you, the Chasam Sofer has around 50 drushas on this pasuk alone. Meaning this pasuk of leman yirbu yameichem, he has about 50 drushas throughout. In one place, the other place, going all the way through. And the truth is, Rav Frank Tversky told me that the Chasam Sofer said he had a year where he only dealt with leman yirbu yameichem. Only leman yirbu yameichem. And it's throughout everywhere. Rav Tversky was calling me all week because I was with him at a wedding on Sunday. So he was calling me all week, telling me different places where he remembered a vort from the Chasam Sofer on leman yirbu yameichem. It's an amazing idea. So Rashi says, simple. You do mitzvos, you keep the Torah, you wear tefillin, you put up mezuzah, you learn, you teach your children. All of those are mentioned in the Parsha, right? All of those right here in Bahayim Shemot, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises you a long life. And if not, if you don't do these things, well, then it's the opposite. There's no such promise. This is the way of the Torah, that whenever the Torah promises something, if you do this, then you're going to get this. Then if you don't do this, then you won't get it. There is no middle ground. It's no, like, if you do this, you get long life, but if you don't do it, then you just won't live a long life, but you'll live a normal life. No, if you don't do it, it's going to be horrible for you. That's the alternative. That's the only alternative that you have here. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh, though, says it's not going on someone who keeps the whole Torah. It's only going on someone who keeps mezuzah properly. It says, Uchsavtom al mezuzos beisecha uvisharecha. Leman yirbu yameichem yimei v'neichem al adama. If you write this on your doorpost and you put up a mezuzah, then you're going to live a long life. And if you don't put it on your doorpost, then you're not going to get it. That's the concept behind it. Because Uchsavtom is written right there, that's where leman yirbu yameichem goes. Which makes sense. The Chizkuni takes it one step further from the Gemara Kiddushin. Lamed Dalam and Aleph. The Gemara says, this pasuk is a reward for anyone who keeps the mitzvah of mezuzah, meaning even women are chayiv in mezuzah. And this really is the Gemara. Women are chayiv in mezuzah because even women need long life. Now, that makes sense. They're not chayiv in Talmud Torah. They're not chayiv in tefillin. But they are chayiv in mezuzah. What's the difference? Because this pasuk tells me that mezuzah gives you long life and all women should get long life. And we actually pasuk in this way. The Yoradeh, Shulchan Aruch Yoradeh, Reish Pei Aleph, Halacha Aleph says that women are careful about mezuzah for this reason. This is not a manly mitzvah, even though it's surrounded by manly mitzvos. It is considered a mitzvah for both men and women because everybody needs arichos yamin. Now, the Paris Yosef points out, this is arichos yamin. Maybe you've heard this before. Have you ever heard anybody say that he had arichos shanim? You ever heard that phrase? No, right? The phrase is always arichos yamin. So what does that mean, arichos yamin? What are we promising a person when we say the guy is going to have arichos yamin? Says the Paris Yosef, it does not mean, necessarily, that he's going to live a long life. You keep the Torah, you keep mitzvos, you put on tefillin, mezuzah, whatever it is, whether it's Rashi, the Chizkuni, whatever it's going to be, if you keep these mitzvos, you are promised to have longer days. I'll tell you a story. When I was younger and I was in yeshiva, I was staying up late at night, and I realized that I was up at Chatzos HaLaila every single night. So I went to my Rebbe and I said to him, can I do Tikkun Chatzos? Tikkun Chatzos is, it's mentioned in Siman Aleph of the Shulchan Aruch, and it's in the Siddurim. So I said, can I do Tikkun Chatzos? It's something that people do. I'm in yeshiva. I can do it. So should I do it? So it's usually the opposite. Usually people sleep, and then they wake up for Tikkun Chatzos, and then they learn all the, up until morning. So I said, I'll do the opposite. I'll do Tikkun Chatzos, and then I'll go to sleep after doing Tikkun Chatzos. This is Rabbi Rav Kirschenbaum in Eretz Yisrael. He said to me, it seems so strange. He said, no one's going to ask me why it wasn't Rav Moshe Feinstein. So I had no idea where he was going with this. I'm like, well, what's going on? But he said, no one's going to ask. You know why no one's going to ask me why it wasn't Rav Moshe Feinstein? Because Rav Moshe Feinstein had 26 hours in his day. And I only have 24. If I had an extra 2 hours, maybe I could be Rav Moshe Feinstein. But Rav Moshe Feinstein had a 26-hour day. He was living on another planet where he was able to add on 2 hours to his life every single day. And I don't have it. I only have 24. His line was, is that we're limited in the amount that we can do and how much we can learn. And he said, for me, Tikkun Chatzos is not the way to go. Tikkun Chatzos was not a good usage of my time. Don't do that. Instead, concentrate on doing something else. Learn or do something else at that time rather than do Tikkun Chatzos during that time. That's what he said over here. The concept is that when somebody has Arichos Yomim, you're able to use your day to the fullest. You have 24 hours. If we go through our day, how much do you sleep per day? Six hours? 7 hours at the most? That's about the right amount for most people, right? I know there are some people that need to get their 8 hours of sleep. Those people don't really exist, or they're girls, so we're not going to deal with them, right? But 6 hours, 6 hours maybe if you're going to get at night, that means out of a 24-hour day, how many hours are left? Come on, you can do this. 24 minus 6, do it quick. Carry the one. You got it? Does anyone have this? 18, very good. 18 hours altogether. You have 18 hours that you're awake. What are you doing? How in the world is there not enough time to be able to learn for an hour a day? Out of 17 hours left, you can't do everything else. You're working for 8-9 hours. You're able to do whatever you need to do in 8-9 hours. You're eating for how long? Let's give 2 hours for eating, which is crazy. But let's say there's 2 hours for eating. That is 8 to 9 hours. 2 hours added on, that's 11 hours. People, you have another 7 hours left. What are you doing with those 7 hours? Let's say you work 12-hour days. You're an idiot because you're wasting your life. But let's say you do 12-hour days altogether. 12 hours, another hour that you're spending 2 hours for eating. That's 14 hours altogether. That's 4 hours left. What are you doing with 4 hours? You're diving out 4 hours chakras? What else are you doing? Oh, so you don't understand, Rev Zimmerman. I've got these TV shows to watch, and each one of them are 25 minutes. They're 25 minutes each, and I watch a whole bunch of shows together. I have no time left for learning. You're a fool. That's what it is? There's no way. That cannot be the best use of our time. Arichos Yomim means you look at your days, not your years. It's not about years. You look at your days and you realize, I have so much time. You're able to lengthen these days and use it properly. L'man yirbu yameichem. You'll use your days properly. When the Sfas Emes died at the age of 52, so the Imre Emes was overheard as they were bringing the Sfas Emes to be buried. The Imre Emes was overheard saying, my father truly had Arichos Yomim. And when people turned to him and said, Arichos Yomim, he lived to the age of 52. It's the year of Shmuel or Amasi. But that's not considered a good age, right? If it was anything else around that time, it's almost like Kares. That can't be a good age. How can we say that that person had Arichos Yomim? Said the Imre Emes, his son. He turned and he said, I didn't say my father had Arichos Sonim. I didn't say he lived a long life. I said it Arichos Yomim. That's what he had. He spent every day to its fullest. He did everything he possibly could during that time. That's what I mean over here. The concept is Arichos Yomim. Rav Sternbach and Tam Vadas says there are people that are Yirei Hashem who treat every day as special and chashuv, as if every day was something there to add to their Avodah Hashem, to add to their Kiyum HaMitzvos. They realize that their time is limited. Rishayim, on the other hand, the way they treat their lives is they kill time. That's what they do. They find something to kill time. I've got nothing to do for the next half hour, so I'll find something to destroy my time. It's hard. But games on your phone, just look at the amount of time that you spend on certain apps. Just look at it. Look at how long you've spent. Go after the end of a week and see how long you spent on one app, on any game that you have, whatever game you're playing. Like, it used to be Candy Crush. I don't even know what's going on now. There was Temple Run for a while, right? Whatever's going on, see how much time you spent. Do you realize that's hours, hours of your time? Forget about what you could do with that. Do you know how many TV shows you could have watched during the time that you were playing that app on your phone? How many TV shows are lost because you were playing on that app? That's the pshat. The pshat is to use your day so well that all of a sudden it's different. And that's Avraham Avinu. He was Baba Yamim. Baba Yamim means he lived a long life. That's for sure true. But Baba Yamim means he used his days. He came upon his days. He understood what he had in his days, and he treated them properly. Verbasara says, if a person treats his life properly, he's not only getting over Karis. Karis is when you die before the age of 60, according to one sheet of the Ramban at the end of Achremos, when you die early. But even if you get past that, there's still something called Karis Diyumi. Kares Diyumi is a concept in which a person dies suddenly, in a horrible fashion. That's the idea of what Kares Diyumi is. So even if you get past the age of Kares, even if you're not getting Kares, you could still get Kares Diyumi. Comes along the Bereva Sada and says, this is the bracha l'man yirbu yimeichem, is that you won't even have Kares Diyumi. Forget about Kares. You're going to live a long life, but you're also going to get around Kares Diyumi. And this is the same concept. You're using your life to the fullest. The Chafetz Chaim said, truly, this is the ultimate reward. There is no greater reward than life. No greater reward. And he gives an example. And I'm telling you, unfortunately, I said this example over to three people to hear what the reaction was. I can tell, you can tell, what kind of a person everyone is by the reaction you have to this. So if you have a negative reaction to this mashal, I hear it. I hear you. I think you have to reconsider. But listen to the mashal. The mashal he gives is the following. He says, let's say a friend came up to you and he offered you, and he had the money, he offered you $5 million for a half an hour of your life. He offered you $5 million for a half hour of your life. You just have to give him, you have to write in a contract. He says, I swear by the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I am giving you a half an hour of my life, and the guy will give you $5 million. Now that sounds awesome, right? I'm only losing a half an hour, and the guy's giving me $5 million for it? That sounds like it's an awesome, awesome deal. Says the Chafetz Chaim, I'll prove to you that it's not. The only reason why you're not thinking that way is because you think you have so much time left and everything's there. At the end of someone's life, when a person knows he's dying, he would give any amount in the world to live an extra half hour. Ask anyone on their deathbed, they would kill, they would do anything to be able to add on to that half hour of life. So this is a bad deal. $5 million, he would give you $10 million to be able to get an extra half an hour added on to the end of his life. Now, I know there are people who are going to say, like, I'd still do it. I hear you. I can't argue with that. That just means you don't honestly think that you're ready to die, that you have so much time left. So I can give up half an hour because it doesn't matter. If you're in the throes of death, if a person knew that he was dying, he'd do anything. He'd do anything. And that's the concept of the Chafetz Chaim. This shows you this is the ultimate of rewards. There is no greater reward to be able to offer us life, arichos yamim. It's so few and far between. Again, shiluach hakan, kibra ve'aim, weights and measures, and this, and that's it. There's no other mitzvah like this. There's nothing, l'man yirbu yimeichem. And in theory, it's the entire Torah, but it's for sure mezuzah. The concept is to try to give everything you can. Now there's Gemara. Brachos daf ches. So even if you haven't done much of brachos, you probably got to this Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan heard that there were sabi bebavel, old men living in Bavel. And he said, he couldn't understand it. Tama. He wondered. V'omar, and he said, wait, l'man yirbu yimeichem, mevenechem, ala adama ksiv. You're supposed to only have length of days, you're supposed to live old, only if you live in Eretz Yisrael. If you live in America, there is no concept of living long. That's what Rabbi Yochanan said. Once they told him that the old men were spending their time. They were mekadmi u'mechashchi. They went early and went late into the base medrash. They were spending their time in the base medrash and shul. Then he said, now I understand it. Now I get why they live long lives. That's what Rabbi Yochanan said, and that's the end of the Gemara. What does that mean? Why does that help? The pasuk says, alo adama, on the land, in Eretz Yisrael, you will live a long life. But if you're here, you can't live a long life, seemingly. What's going on? But that doesn't even make any sense. God, do you not know old people? Do you know how many people over the age of 100 there are in Japan today? I don't either. I'm sure there's a lot, though. Now, I think if somebody wants to look it up, they can. I think it's something like 35,000 people that are over the age of 100 living in Japan. Ika sapi babavo, there's old people in Babel. There's old people in Japan. Why are we questioning the amount of old people in Bavel? Shouldn't it all be in Eretz Yisrael? And we're saying this. This is Rabbi Yochanan's line. It's as if there's something wrong. So the Kli Yakar answers this question, and it seems to be so pashut. It's so obvious. He says, there's a Gemara Megillah, Chavtes, all shoals and Bate Medrash. Every shoal and base medrash that's in Chutz Laretz will eventually pick itself up and bring themselves to Eretz Yisrael. Now, I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't know if the entire building's going to pick itself up, like this entire building is going to pick itself up and plant itself in Eretz Yisrael. If it's going to be brought brick by brick, there is a certain base medrash they claim that was built in Bavel brick by brick. They took down a base medrash in Eretz Yisrael and they built it up in Bavel and they rebuilt it in Bavel so that it could be, this is the shoal of Eretz Yisrael. I don't know what it means. I have absolutely no idea what it means. Is it every shoal? Like, what about if it's a shoal that I don't agree with their Ashkafa? Does that shul make it to Eretz Yisrael? Right? Because it's all up to me. I get to make all the decisions. Like, what shuls end up making it? Let's say it was a shul that davened so long that I can never stand that shul. Does that shul make it in there? What shuls make it in? The assumption is everyone. Every single shul, if they're doing it l'shem shemayim, if there's kedusha involved, then the shul picks itself up and it brings itself to Eretz Yisrael. That is the assumption. The assumption is that it's going to pick itself up and be there. That means, people, you're standing on hallowed ground. You're standing on holy Eretz Yisrael ground. You thought you were in Eretz Yisrael and you were there. You're in Eretz Yisrael here. Every base medrash and every shul has the concept, has the status of Eretz Yisrael. You're sitting here. We all know if you walk Dalet Amos in Eretz Yisrael, it's like you already get a schus of walking around. You get a mitzvah. Dalet Amos in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. Dalet Amos in shul. I think this is the reason why you always see those guys in the back of the shul walking back and forth. Dalet Amos. They get their Dalet Amos in, right? They're going back and forth, back and forth. That's the whole concept. They're going back and forth. This is the concept. When you're in this shul, what Rabbi Yochanan was saying is there's old people above all, but you have to be in Eretz Yisrael in order to get this long life because of learning Torah. Once he heard that they spent all their days in the base medrash, he said, oh, that's okay. That is Eretz Yisrael. It's as if they're in Eretz Yisrael. It's the concept, by the way. For argument's sake, are you allowed to eat inside a shul? Are you allowed to eat or drink inside a shul? Technically not. It's Eretz Yisrael land. It's Eretz Yisrael land. Obviously, you can eat in Eretz Yisrael, but a shul in Eretz Yisrael has a certain status. It depends on how you make the shul, the tanoim that you make inside there. There were tanoim conditions made in this shul specifically that you can eat in here because the whole shul was made without a social hall so that we can have kiddush inside, etc. The guy said it's not lechayil, but in theory it works. Yes, Shmuel.
I read stories that Chavetz Chaim used to bring food into the Beis Medrash for the poor people.
Well, that for sure. He used to do that on purpose, right? Because they wouldn't have anywhere else to eat. That's where the poor people were. For sure, yeah, the Tanaim, they were for sure had Teirin to be able to do such things in the Beis Medrash itself. Just applying it over here. The Vilna Gaon says his answer as well, but it's a classic Kliyukr. You're sitting in Eretz Yisrael right now, guys. You're sitting in Eretz Yisrael. Treat it that way. Rav Eliashiv says, we all understand that shuls have been safety nets for anyone that needed something. It's, so to speak, the area of protection. You know the story of the Chassam Sofer and Renussan Adler? It's one of the best stories. I don't fully understand it, so I can't tell you if I fully understand the story. The Chassam Sofer came to Rav Nachman Adler before his bar mitzvah. He came to when he was 11 or 12 years old. He was a big kid, so he looked like he was already a really big kid. He looked like he was a lot older than he was, but the yeshiva was for people that were 18, 19, 20 years old. Rav Nachman Adler himself was an unbelievable makobo and one of the great gedolim of the generation. The Chassam Sofer came to learn with him when he was a really young kid, but he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. He finished Shas before, I think, when he was 13, right after his bar mitzvah, right on that time. So he had a silver atara. This is during the Napoleonic Wars. And during these Napoleonic Wars, all of the silver was confiscated by the government because they needed it to make bullets and guns, etc., and everything like that. So he had a silver atara for his Sefer Torah, and he didn't want to give it up. He figured, like, nobody's going to find it. It'll be in there. We'll leave it inside the Aron Kodesh. Somebody told on him, a moser, told the government on him that he had a silver atara. So the government was sending officials to go check out if he had that silver atara in shul. So Rav Nachman Adler was warned about it 5 minutes before the government came. He had nowhere to hide the atara. He couldn't bury it. He couldn't do whatever. The government was already coming. The government officials were already coming. So he ran over to the Chassam Sofer. He said, come with me. He brought the Chassam Sofer over to the Aron Kodesh, gave him the Sefer Torah with the atara on top of it, put him onto the bima, put a talus around him, and he said, don't move. The people came inside the shul. They ransacked the whole shul. They looked inside. They ran everywhere. They were overturning tables and chairs and everything. Right, took Svarim off the shelves and everything. After a half an hour of searching everywhere, they couldn't find the silver atara, and they got up and left. Nelson Adler went up to the Chassam Sofer, took off his talus, right, grabbed the Sefer Torah with the atara on it, and brought it back to the Aron Kodesh. Right, that's the classic line. You know what I use that for? You know the famous line that Esav was looking for Yaakov, and Yaakov was sitting in Yeshiva Shem Be'Ever for 14 years? Wouldn't that be the first place you check? You know who Yaakov is, right? Wouldn't that be the very first place you check? You're looking for Yaakovina. You don't know where Yaakovina went. Why don't I check his seat in the base medrash? Like, is that that? I know there's somebody that says Esav for 14 years didn't go to shul. It doesn't surprise me. There's no such concept as a shul back then. But regardless, I get the concept. That's the idea. But you know what? The pshat is that if a person is kulo Torah and kulo Ruchni, and a person's searching for him for evil, you don't see him. He doesn't exist in front of your eyes. He disappeared. He's not there. That's the concept. It's an unbelievable concept. That's the idea that Rav Eliashiv is saying over here. It's an amazing thing. It's sort of like a protection that's there, and this is the concept. He didn't think it was going to apply in Golos, because shuls can't be protections. There's non-Jewish neighbors anywhere that want to kill you. There's no way that a shul can be a protection, and therefore you're not going to live a long life. Simply put, how can you live a long life when everybody's going to try to grab you? The answer is, It still works. In Eretz Yisrael, it still works. That's the concept behind it. That's the idea behind it. The Torah Tmima says there are many things that promise, as we said, there are other things that promise the Yichus Yamin. But there's even Gemaras. What happens if you say Amen properly? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, long life, brachos, mem zayin abeis. If you do Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum, anybody know what the Gemara says about that? Again in brachos, marichin lo yamavu shnosav. You're going to have Yichus Yamin. Says the Torah Tmima, what's going on over here? There were all these Gemaras in Megillah. Anybody here do Megillah? Have you ever learned Megillah? Maharachta Yamim. With what have you had length of days? How did you have Arichos Yamim? It was asked to like 8 different Gedolim. None of them said Mezuzah. None of them said the Torah. They said like the weirdest things. I never used the base medrash as a shortcut. I was always the first one in, the last one out. I never went up to Duchen, even if my friends told me to, because I'm a Yisrael. Like the weirdest things that gave them Arichos Yamim. And this should have been it. What, Rabbi Yochanan should have said, what? There's no Arichos Yamim for any of this. There's only Arichos Yamim for Laman Yerbu Yamechem, and that's that. That's what he should have said over here. The pshat is once again, says the Torah Tmima, Rabbi Yochanan's not questioning Amir Ratzim. Amir Ratzim could have long lives without the Torah. There are other things, there are other factors involved. Non-Jews could also have long lives. That's not what he's questioning. Talmidei Chachamim can only have long lives, this is what Rabbi Yochanan thought, can only have long lives in Eretz Yisrael. If you're studying the Torah, if you're involved in Torah, the only way for you to have Arichos Yamim is if you're in Eretz Yisrael, and that's that. And for that, they told him, but they're in the Beis Medrash, and he said, oh, a Beis Medrash is good enough. If they spend time in a Beis Medrash, it's equal to living in Eretz Yisrael. Not that it is Eretz Yisrael, but it's like that. The concept is like that. Rosh Chodesh asks the same question. The Ksav Sofer says the same question. It's very, very similar to Revel Yashiv up above. It's the same basic concept over here. This is what he couldn't understand over here. Now, Rashi says, Laseis Lahem. Do you see that pasuk? Well, we say it every day. Every single day. Asher Nishba Lashem Lavoseichem, Laseis Lahem. God swore to their fathers, to your fathers, that he'd give the land to them. But the fathers are dead. How are they going to get it? So what's the easy answer? Tchias HaMesim. Tchias HaMesim, right? There's going to be Tchias HaMesim. Mikan, the Gemara proves in Sanhedrin, Sadium Abeis. Mikan, we learn from here that everyone's going to have Tchias HaMesim, Lassad Lavo. How do we know? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give the Avos the land, Lassad Lavo. They're going to get it. They're going to inherit it. But why is it here? Why would he put that here and not anywhere else? So the Radvaz. This is a famous line, and I don't know if everybody knows this. There are two Tchias HaMesim. Now, I just, again, a timeout over here. I don't want you to think of Tchias HaMesim as being like this zombie apocalypse where everybody's coming up and looking for brains and like running after people and like trying to kill all the live people. That's not what Tchias HaMesim is. Tchias HaMesim has been bastardized into the form of what zombies are all about. You know what zombies stand for, right? Everybody know why Rob Zombie came up with the concept of what a zombie is? Doesn't exist back in the day. They're the best they had are mummies. Zombies represent the poor people who eventually take over. Like the rich people, the wealthy people are like the few people in number that are around there. But the people coming up from the graves and trying to destroy them, whatever, are the poor people that eventually the masses win out when society gets corrupted. Then eventually the masses will be able to destroy everybody else. That's what zombies represent. Zombies represent poor people that eventually get up and they can't be overrun because there's just so many of them. That if they ever get up en masse, they would take over the entire area. It would all be under their jurisdiction, let's say. That's what zombies really are. Tchias HaMesim, it's not what it is. You're not going to have like a disembodied hand, you know, coming up from the ground, right? And everybody's like freaked out. And somebody's like, no, it's Tchias HaMesim. It's okay. We're going to be okay with that. There's going to be a full body that comes from the ground. From the ground itself, it's going to form into a human form, and it's going to come up. It's going to include that luz bone that we all know, as well as any other bones that might be down there, but it's going to address itself the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took clay out of the earth to form other Marishon. Tchias HaMesim is going to be the exact same thing with that person, and you're going to be created in some way with Levush, not Levush. That's Cleopatra's question in Sanhedrin. But regardless, something's going to come up. Okay, Tchias HaMesim is a lot better than the way people make it out to be. It's going to be awesome. But there are two of them. One is going to happen at the very end of days. That's going to be on the great Yom HaDin HaGadol VaHaNeira. That's when everyone gets up and they get judged. Rishayim and Tzadikim alike, there are only very few exceptions, but Rishayim and Tzadikim get up and they get judged. Their final judgment of what's going to be in Olam Haba. That is the real Tchias HaMesim that everybody knows about. But there's another Tchias HaMesim. The Tchias HaMesim that happens by Yemos HaMashiach, says the Radvaz. that in that day, when Mashiach comes, there's going to be people that come with. The Dor HaMidbar brought by Moshe Rabbeinu. The Avos are going to come back. When Mashiach is here, there's going to be a Tchias HaMeisim where the great, great Tzaddikim, not the whole people, but the great, great Tzaddikim will get up and lead us. They'll be in charge of us, along with Mashiach, to be able to tell us what we need to do and where we need to go. The truth is, says the Chassam Sofer, the whole concept of Tchias HaMeisim makes a lot of sense. It really makes a lot of sense. Adam HaRishon was born into a situation where everything was perfect, and we know that. Everything was absolutely perfect. He chose, willingly, a task that would be a little bit harder. Put me somewhere else. But that means that Gan Eden is real. Gan Eden is not a spiritual place. Gan Eden is a physical place. There are people that can live in Gan Eden. Gan Eden is real. That concept, if this idea is there, that means the Eitz HaChayim, the Eitz HaDas, are there for a reason. They're physical. They're actual things. We should eventually be able to eat them. How are we going to get there? We can't be in Gan Eden until Tchias HaMeisim. That after a person has already gone through the kapara of death and their body is perfected to the point where their spirituality is reigning over their physicality, that's when we go into Gan Eden. That's the concept when we hit Gan Eden. That this world won't be needed anymore. We'll be able to be in Gan Eden. Our bodies will be able to survive in a level that Gan Eden is, whatever Gan Eden is. That's the concept of the first, the real Tchias HaMeisim that'll happen. And then there's the other Tchias HaMeisim that happens for everyone on the Yom HaDin, HaGadol VaNeiro. This is the concept over here of Lahem, L'Seis Lahem. God will give it to them. The Avos are going to get up. There's going to be a first, a Tchias HaMeisim before the ultimate Tchias HaMeisim. And in this Tchias HaMeisim, the Avos are going to get up. The Shvatim are going to get up. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to get up. Aaron's going to get up. They're going to lead over Dor HaMidbar into Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be a whole new concept. And the concept is mentioned right here. L'man yirbu yemeichem b'mei v'neichem. Alo adam asher nishba Hashem l'avaseichem l'aseis lohem. On the land, when everything goes well, you do all the mitzvahs properly, things are going great, then the Avos come back. That's when the Shvatim come back. That's when everybody gets together. It's going to be awesome, but it's everybody all together in one. But I still haven't answered the big question. Kimei Hashamayim ala Aretz, people. Kimei Hashamayim ala Aretz, like the days of the heaven on the earth. What in the world does those words mean? Again, you say it twice a day. What does it mean? You're going to live as long as the Yemei Shamayim ala Aretz? Is that what it refers to? What does that refer to? What does that mean? Are we going to live 5,777 years? Because that's how many days we've had the Shemayim on top of the Aretz? Is that what it is? So corner one opinion, it's a Gemara from Shmuel in Sanhedrin Sadi Test. Yeah, that's exactly what it means. Kimei Shemayim al Aretz means you will live, your Arichus Yomim will be the amount of time that heaven and earth have been together. The world is 5,777 years old. You will be 5,777 years old. If the world is 15 billion years old, you'll live 15 billion years. And just from the push-up shot that it's 5,777, you're going to live that long, as long as Kimei Shemayim al Aretz. That's one. But the Ramban says such an awesome answer. He says, did you know that technically there's, according to Rashi, there's no chiv to do mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz? There's a chiv in Eretz Yisrael, but there's no chiv in Chutz La'aretz. Give me a raya, guys. How do we know that technically that chiyuv of doing mitzvos is only in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz La'aretz? Where do we see that answer given? For example, what do you got, Nechemiah? Yaakov Avinu, marrying two sisters, right? How was he able to marry two sisters? The famous answer the Rishonim was outside of Eretz Yisrael. When he came to Eretz Yisrael, Rachel had to die. This is the famous answer. Yeah. I'm sorry? 100%. You're 100% right. But it seems that the chiyuv of mitzvos is only technically based on when we go to Eretz Yisrael. And that's why everything is promised when he gets Eretz Yisrael, when he gets Eretz Yisrael. Now, nowadays, Ash, you're right. There are 177 mitzvahs lo sase that apply for us nowadays. 194 mitzvahs lo sase, 77 mitzvahs sase, and 26 mitzvahs that are totally in Eretz Yisrael, that are only totally in Eretz Yisrael itself. All the other mitzvahs are korbanos mitzvahs, or mitzvahs that don't apply to us. It's about 300 mitzvahs that deal with korbanos and the Beis HaMikdash, etc., that obviously don't apply to us nowadays. Out of the 613, you can only do, quick math, guys, 194 plus 26. So how much is that? That's going to be 220 plus 77, so 297 mitzvos out of the 613 that you could do nowadays. That obviously leaves 316 mitzvos that we're not able to do whatsoever. We just can't do. There's no way to do them. Out of those 297 mitzvos, by the way, you can't do a lot of them anyway. For example, how many of you own a donkey? You don't have to, okay, so you have one. So you have Pidyon Petach Hamor. Who's going to do that? And if you don't do Pidyon Petach Hamor, you have to knock over the neck. You got two mitzvos, aseid yoraisa that are part of the 77. Who's going to do it? That's why when you get a possibility of doing the mitzvah shiluach hakan, take it. Take it. I don't care if it seems cruel to the mother bird. Do it. It's one of the 77 mitzvahs aseid, and we don't get that. We don't get it so often. We don't get it. I'm going to say it, okay? I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize right now. Benching is a deoraisa. It's a deoraisa. I'm going to say it again because I know this is lost by most people. Benching is a deoraisa. How do you forget to do it? We only have 77 of these guys. Davening might not even be a deoraisa, but benching is. By the way, you should still daven. But benching is for sure a deoraisa. How do we forget it? I'm not saying that I'm perfect. I'm pretty good, but I'm not. But here's the way you can tell. You know how you can tell if you're benching properly? Are you saying migdol or magdil at the end of your benching? If you're saying migdol quite often, then you're a Russia. Because that means you're only davening, you're only benching on Shabbos. If you're saying magdil all the time, then you're awesome and you're a Jew. Okay, that means you're doing it correctly. And don't tell me, no, Rabbi, I make sure I don't have a mezonos during the week so that I don't have to bench. You're a Russia. You have four brachos that you get out of benching. And you're purposely not doing it so that you can make a shahakol and a brain of fushes afterward? Oh my gosh. Well, so you can, I know, because you want that extra 3.5 minutes. Because, Rabbi, do you know what kind of TV show I could watch in 3.5 minutes? There's so much. I get it. Not totally, but I get it. Benching is so important when it comes to this. Says the Ramban. These mitzvos that we do in Chutz La'aretz are there. Oh, I shouldn't say the Ramban. Rashi says them. So they're not new to us when we go to and return with Mashiach. Says the Ramban, this is a sod amok. A very, very deep secret. Why we do mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz. But suffice it to say, avadei were chayiv to do mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz. Everybody's chayiv. There's no question whatsoever. But this pasuk, Laman Yirbu Yimeichem, is referring to the time when Mashiach comes. When everybody's going to be doing the mitzvos properly. And everything's going to do around here. Throughout the Torah, we see that rewards are physical. Physical. Based on this world. Everything over here. This Olam Haba is mentioned only indirectly by some of the way. Here, the mitzvah is just this. Kimei HaShamayim Ala Aretz is a reference to Olam Haba. This is a remez. There will be an Olam Haba. There will be the next world. That's what these words, Kimei HaShamayim Ala Aretz. So every time you say it, this is what you want to think. Laman Yirbu Yimeichem Yimei Menechem. So that your days and the days of your children will be long. Ala Adama, when we go to Eretz Yisrael by the times of Mashiach, when we go there, Kimei HaShamayim Ala Aretz. And then the days will be where heaven and earth are put together. Ruchnius and Gashmius will work together as one to be able to create something awesome. That's the concept of what Kimei HaShamayim La'aretz is. Now, I've got a lot of other answers over here. There's a bunch of awesome answers. There's a Chassam Sofer based on the Ramah Mipano about going into Gan Eden alive while a person's still alive. We were promised long lives, maybe 400 to 500 years. That's brought down by the Rabbeinu Bechaya. Rabbeinu Bechaya has another answer altogether. There's a Kedusha Slavi and Rav Hirsch mentioning how we bring down Shefa from above and that Kimei HaShamayim La'aretz is just like the heaven gives down the Shefa to the earth. Everything comes from above and gives it down to us. So too, that's what it's going to be like for us. That we should live lives where we're constantly being mashpia on others. Always giving and giving and giving to others. Giving and putting in more and more and more. That's the concept that Kedushas Levi and Rav Hirsch are saying. You should be the type of person that not just lives a long life, but is mamish always trying to do for somebody else that's out there. But the Netziv. Oh man, the Netziv. Says the Netziv. We know that land changes. Did you know that the Midwest was once a great massive lake? Did you know that? Do you know that there are areas, like, has anybody ever been to Utah? I know this is a weird question. I've never been to Utah. You've been there. Yeah. You see the rock formations and everything out there, right? You know why there are these massive rock formations in Utah? Because it was an underwater lake. The lake was huge. Absolutely huge. There was all this stuff all over. It was a massive, massive, massive lake. And at that point, right, somehow, I don't know, the water dried up, it became dry land, and now it has all these awesome, awesome rock formations all over the place. The Grand Canyon was from a massive river, right, that ended up going through. Now it's the remnants of whatever was there, but it's no longer what it once was. The whole Grand Canyon was formed by that. Now, I'm not getting into how it took. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that land exists today where there was once water. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that water now exists where there once was land. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it together this way. The land shifts. The land changes. The land becomes something different completely. All of this is based on constellations in the sky and the Shefa that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings from Shemayim. Somewhat happens from the sun and the moon, and we know that the tides work according to the sun and the moon and how everything works. But everything comes from the constellations above. The concept is, when we go to Eretz Yisrael in the future, we're all going to think to ourselves, guys, if every shul is getting up and planting themselves in Eretz Yisrael, right, if they're all going, how's there going to be enough room? How are we going to have enough room in Eretz Yisrael? How's that going to work? Says the Netziv, not a question. Just like nowadays, you see the heavens affect the earth, and the earth expands or the earth shrinks. In the future, when we go to Eretz Yisrael with Mashiach, the land is going to expand out there. It's going to be like the skin of a deer. Skin of a deer, I've actually never skinned a deer. But Chazal tell us that if you take that skin, it stretches. It stretches out. Unlike skin from a cow or from a sheep or from a goat, the skin of a deer will stretch out sort of like spandex. It'll stretch out. Eretz Yisrael is spandex. Eretz Yisrael, I bet you never heard that before. Eretz Yisrael is going to stretch out in such a way, it's going to be something where all of a sudden you're going to see, this is awesome. It's so much more room. That's the concept. Kimea Shemaim al Aretz. Just like nowadays, we see that heaven affects the earth and makes things happen, so too in the future. It's going to be exactly that. The land is going to be affected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's going to become huge. There's going to be way more than enough room. I've always said, there's going to be a person in Hebron. Hebron is supposed to be the entrance to Gan Eden. Someone in Hebron has a backyard. And in that backyard, when Mashiach comes, all of a sudden this huge entranceway is going to come in. And it was like land, just like that. And it's going to open up, and all of a sudden it's going to become this huge entranceway to Gan Eden. The guy's going to be like, oh, real estate, because he's a Jew. So he's for sure going to tell you, this is awesome. This is the greatest place in the world. But that's what's going to happen. The whole land is going to expand. How is it going to be? How is it going to happen? 400 parcel by 400 parcel. What's going to be with it? I have no idea. I could care less. It's going to be awesome. Maybe we take over most of the Mediterranean Sea. Maybe all the Mediterranean Sea will dry itself over and the whole area will become land again, right? Same way that Atlantis was sunk into the sea, if it happened, right? So too, Eretz Yisrael will become this huge land and we'll all be able to live there together and every shul will be able to go there. Now there's a bunch, the Rush, the Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Shach, the Alshich, they all mention 500 years over here. They go in, you can check out what they say over here on the sheet itself. You should know this vort, Laman Yerbuyim Eichem, was also the last speech of the Belzer Rebbe, Rav Aaron of Belz. The last thing he said was on this pasuk. He passed away after saying it. He said, our lives are all about giving to our children, making sure that they have enough and they have everything they need. And that's the idea, Laman Yerbuyim Eichem, Meven Nechem. The point is not, so you have long lives so that your children have long lives, because people are willing to give anything they have to their kids. And then, even when you're in Shemayim, it'll be like you're Al Ha'aretz. Kimei HaShemayim, when you're in Shemayim, you're there. Why? Because when your kid says Kaddish for you, and your kid makes a Siyum for you, and your kid does all these Tchuyas for you, it counts for you even though you're in Shemayim and you can't go any further. But because you have kids, people that are learning from you who are going higher and doing greater things, you become higher. You become greater. We're going to end with this one. The Chassam Sofer says, why is Shemayim called Shemayim? Anybody know this? The Gemara Chagiga? Shemayim is called Shemayim because what? Shemayim is made up of Eish and Mayim. So let me ask you, Eish and Mayim, right? Shemayim. What happened to the Aleph? Where's the Aleph? Why don't we call it Ashamayim? Don't tell me, like, too much. What's the pshat? What is it? Okay, so let me ask you another question. Do you know why Aretz is called land? Why land is called Aretz? Do you know why? Because the answer is that it was Rotz, Lasos, Masha Avad Kono, Masha Asa Kono, whatever the master prescribed for it. It ran. So tell me, guys, so what should Eretz be called? It should be called Rutz. How did Eretz get the Aleph of Ashamayim? It should be Eshmayim and Rutz. Eshmayim and Rutz. That should be the two names. But instead we have Shamayim and Eretz. Where did that come from? How did that happen? How did that happen? Says the Chassam Sofer in Bereishis Rabbah. We got that. So what ends up happening is that the Shemayim brings down Shefa to the earth. There's stuff that comes down. We can call that rain, but obviously it's a lot more than that. There's Shefa that comes down the earth, and the wonders that God brings into the world, the Aleph, which is the same letters as Peleth, the wonders that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings to the world, come from Shemayim and arrive to the land itself. The Aleph of HaShemayim is brought down to the Eretz. That's the concept. There's Shemayim, and then there's Eretz. He says the exact same idea comes from Av Uben. There's a pasuk that Yaakovinu is telling over to his children. He says, Misham Roeh Eben Yisrael. From there, they'll shepherd the stone of Israel. The stone, it says Rashi, is Av Uben. So wait a second. Eben is Aleph Beis Nun. But you're using it as Av and Bain. What's Pshat? Says the Chassam Sofer, same idea. That every father gives a little bit of himself to his kid. Now, obviously, the physical DNA is the obvious. Okay, so my kid looks a little bit like me, right? That can happen. But it's more than that. There's spiritual DNA. You give everything of yourself to your child. The Shemayim ala Aretz is the way that we should teach our children. We just said in Mahayim Shema Tishma, we're about to say, you're going to teach your children. We're teaching them how to act, what to do, how to be their whole lives. So that you have long lives, but not only you, your children have long lives. You want to give over to them. You should act the way that Shemayim gave to the Aretz. The same way that Shemayim gave of itself, took away from itself, allowed itself to lose its Aleph and give it to the land, that's what you have to do for your children. You have to be willing to give up your Aleph. You have to be willing to give up everything you have. And then you'll have taught them properly. Then you'll have done something big. I've always heard that people will specifically learn in the house so that their children see their parents learning, see their father learning, or their mother learning, and that way they'll think to themselves, that's what I have to do. The concept is 100% true. Because if the father is never learning, then why does the son want to learn? Why would the son want to do something like that? It stems from the Av to the Ben. In order to do that, you have to remember, Kimea Shamayim Ala Oretz. So that's what we did today. What we spoke about is the simple reward and why we do these mitzvos. We spoke about Arichos Yomim instead of Arichos Shanim. We spoke about the Chafetz Chaim, the reward for life, why everybody wants to have life, the Kli Yakar on the Rebbe Yochanan, how it could be Al Ho Adama and everything like that. We spoke about Kimea Shamayim Ala Oretz, and we gave 6 out of, how many answers do I have here? Out of 11 answers, I gave you 6 of the answers of Kimea Shamayim Ala Oretz. Go ahead, guys. Have a great Shabbos.